From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. At its best, artificial intelligence is a great complement to human endeavors. At its worst, AI is an existential crisis, making humans irrelevant. Today on the show, you'll hear about an unlikely pairing of AI and human creativity, a ballet. The choreographer at the Eugene Ballet will talk about her latest creation, Petrushka, an AI ballet. It's a bold social commentary set to music and movement. Then, in the second part of the show, we'll check in with our own reporter about the latest budget crisis at Eugene's 4J. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Ballet is all about human movement, human emotion, and human creativity. But in a new production from the Eugene Ballet, all those human elements crash against the intrusion of artificial intelligence. We talk to the choreographer and creator now. Suzanne Haig, the assistant artistic director and resident choreographer for the Eugene Ballet, thanks for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, we're talking about this new ballet that you've created, and let's start with this. I want you to describe the ballet, but before you do that, why did you want to make this particular ballet?
That's a great question. Reimagining Petrushka has been something I've wanted to do for a long time. And it's actually a reimagining of a ballet from 1911.
Wow.
And I've always wanted to explore ballet with an AI lens because I think ballet has this tradition, has always had this tradition of being fascinated by humans playing beings that aren't human, that look human. So, I mean, in the Nutcracker, you know, you have someone playing a Nutcracker doll. In ballets like Coppelia, you have people playing dolls that look human but don't move in a human way. And that's fascinating, I think, to choreographers.
Explain that in terms of this. And this is maybe an extremely basic question for you, but developing a ballet, choreography, you know, how do you do it? Is it that you have this idea and you start small? I always think of ballet being so grand.
Yeah.
Do you start with the big picture first and bring it in, or is it the exact opposite?
For myself as a choreographer, it's different for everyone.
Okay.
And for me, by project, I think it's different. I plan ahead. So I start with a big vision of what I want to create or see or what I want the audience to experience. But when I'm physically working on building the steps on dancers, I do start very small. But the process is, I think for Petrushka, I started 2 years before we premiered it in 2023.
Okay.
Just planning, but then we have a three-week period in the studio with the dancers where I'm actually setting the movement on them.
Okay.
But the big overarching scope has already been thought out.
I see. Talk about the interplay with the dancers. Mm-hmm. Do you solicit a lot of feedback from them? And I guess the question is, because they're doing the movements,
right.
and of course, I know you know what the movement is supposed to be like, but are there times when they say, actually, I think it would look better this way, or I can't do this particular movement, can we try something else?
Yeah, my process is very collaborative mm-hmm. with the dancers, and I've been working with a lot of these dancers with Eugene Ballet for years now. It's definitely a trial and error process, and I think the dancers feel very comfortable saying, you know, I feel that this is awkward for me. Could I try it to the other direction?
Hmm.
They're very open to making suggestions, but they also understand that I have a vision that I want us all to accomplish.
Yeah.
We do laugh a lot because things don't always go well the first time. So it is a playful atmosphere, I think, to try to figure out how are we going to make a ballet look like how we want it to look and how we want the audience to experience it.
Well, talk about that. What are patrons going to see when they mm-hmm. come to see this ballet that you've created?
Sure. So Petrushka, the original 1911 ballet, is a story about three puppets. And it's full of heart. It's very emotional. And it's comedic. In its nature. So my treatment of this, I'm taking these three main character puppets and translating them to be AI beings, and they each have a function. Petrushka is an emotional, empathetic AI being. There's a companion who is programmed for love, and then there's a warrior, and their relationship in the original and this version is a bit of a love triangle.
Okay.
So, and so I've kept that fairly true to the original story, but of course, in this sort of modern futuristic setting. So the audience is going to see the interaction of these three dancers, and their movements are not human, but there is it's a full cast, our full company. There'll be 22 dancers in this production. The rest of the dancers are playing humans, and their movement is less human, I would say. just a social commentary on how AI and technology and social media is shifting, perhaps, how we interact with each other as humans.
The key word in AI is artificial, and yet there's nothing artificial about the dancers who are... Did you have to sort of, again, sort of getting back to the interplay with the dancers, I mean, I could imagine that if you told someone, dance like a robot, we all kind of have that sort of plotting idea of what a robot movement would look like, but I imagine it's very different, isn't it? How did you coax out the real out of the artificial, if you will?
It was a lot of experimenting, and I am really interested as a choreographer in how dancers interact with each other. And as a person, I'm interested in how humans interact with each other. So we did a lot of, for example, the warrior and the companion, they have a duet together.
Okay.
So it's a romantic pas de deux, if you will, between two robots. And so we, our key phrases, we were saying, how can we make this more functional? Like as if you are two pieces of a machine, and how would you move together, and how would you interact if you're trying to create something that's functional? Their behavior is anything but functional. It's silly and ridiculous, really, but we kept trying to make it look more and more like machinery, and I think the result is something that is quite fun to watch.
Interesting. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Suzanne Hegg. She is the Associate Artistic Director and Resident Choreographer of the Eugene Ballet. Stravinsky's Petrushka. How similar is it? Where will people, especially those that are familiar with the ballet, where will they say, oh, wow, boy, that took a turn?
Well, Stravinsky, I say his music is very bossy.
Okay.
So the score is definitely set up to tell a story. And the plot of our version definitely follows that to some degree.
Okay.
Especially with these three main AI beings who are puppets in the original. And the character of Petrushka is, I would say, recognizable if people are familiar with the original version. What is definitely different is how we treat the stage and how I treat the groups of people, the humans. We have video screens on the stage that are representing what the dancers are hoping for, seeing through VR goggles, how they interact with each other. So there's a scene where two human dancers put on VR goggles. My humans never touch each other in the ballet, but up on the screens, they're physically dancing by touching each other, and then you'll see them on the stage unable to touch.
Artificial intelligence in its probably its best form is sort of this idea that this can do something that a human wouldn't have to do. Maybe it's something mundane, maybe it's something unsafe, but obviously everything about ballet is human. Talk about what you're trying to say, especially because one of the biggest fears is, AI is going to replace me.
I am most interested in this human interaction. That's why I'm a choreographer. That's why I love live dance and theater. And so to show humans really behaving and acting in a less connected way than the AI characters in this ballet. I think shows that that juxtaposition of what is technology doing to us? How is it maybe taking away our connection with each other? And are we okay with this? So I want it to be, for the audience, a little bit of a mirror to say, me as a choreographer, I'm not a scientist. I don't have answers about sure. what this, the advent of AI is going to do to us. But I have fears, as we all do, I think. And I just wanted to show that to the audience. But also, my way of coping with things that are scary is through humor.
Sure. Well, obviously, the fear of AI, as we talked mm-hmm. about, this idea of replacement. And I have heard from other folks in different artistic realms mm-hmm. that AI cannot replace the right. true human creativity. And so in a way, your ballet is showcasing the fears that we have, but also mm-hmm. kind of smashing through them to a degree.
Right, and showing this ballet could not be done with non-humans.
Sure.
and I think our
I'm
art,
glad.
Yeah, me too. and our art form, I feel like my job as a choreographer is relatively safe, at least for now. but it is really interesting how people are responding to this ballet. So I first created this in 2023, and at the time it was more of sci-fi. It felt more sci-fi. Now bringing it back to the stage, I've made some adjustments, but it's similar in scope, and it feels different. It's hitting different, and people are reacting to AI differently now than they were in 2023 for sure. And we've even had most people are just curious about like what does an AI ballet look like? but we have had some people call in and say, how dare you replace the dancers and the choreographers with AI, which is not what we're doing,
sure,
and not
sure.
something we could do. I'm very much a human choreographer, but it is interesting that people have that fear and that reaction, like, oh, no, we want to see real art, which is what this is about.
Yeah. Well, in reading some of the materials before talking with you, this in the press release, they talked about, you know, kind of honoring dance history, but mm-hmm. also pushing the art forward. Talk mm-hmm. about how this ballet does that.
Right. So I think the use of technology, ballet is always changing. Art is always changing with the times. And the use of technology in our set and how it relates to the dancers on stage is definitely something that is new in our realm, and I think creates a very interesting visual as an artist to play with both video images of dancers and then their actual real physical forms on stage. So that's something that, as a choreographer, I haven't worked with before this project, and definitely called up a lot of different ways of creating. And I think that's we will see more technology coming into live theater spaces. We have. I mean, theaters used to have candles, you know. so we're always pushing forward. And I think just the stories we tell, how we take a ballet that was originally about puppets and make it relevant, clearly it is relevant. People are curious about what this ballet means, if it's involved in AI, how is it related? Is it just about AI? Are we using AI? I think just keeping a pulse on what's happening in our world and creating art and ballet, even if it's an old form of art, with this in mind is what's pushing us forward.
If someone's out there listening who's maybe never been to a ballet before, sure. is this a good one to go to? Is this something that's going to probably resonate with a rookie, if you will?
Absolutely. The first time we did it, a lot of people said that this show was total eye candy. There's a lot to look at. The physicality of the dancers is amazing in this show, and it's actually a double bill. So Petrushka is about a 45-minute ballet.
Okay.
And we're opening with Martha Graham's Dark Meadow Suite, which is a modern dance piece, very physical, very beautiful, very organic, which is the opposite of Petrushka. So I think you don't need to know anything about modern dance or ballet to enjoy this particular show. It's really two pieces that are visually stunning, and expressive, and I think audiences can experience them, sit back and experience in them however they need to, whether that is to laugh at Petrushka or be scared at Petrushka. I do think that this is a great ballet for someone that doesn't have a connection to the art form to experience.
Good enough. She's Suzanne Haig. She is the assistant associate artistic director and resident choreographer at the Eugene Ballet, talking about the Petrushka AI Ballet that's going on now. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Rebecca Hanson-White has been following the brutal budget challenges at 4J, and she gets us up to speed now. Friend of the show, Rebecca Hanson-White, always great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting with us.
Always great to be here.
Well, not a great subject, but let's get people up to speed first about, boy, a really difficult budget challenge with 4J. How do we get here?
Yeah, so I guess to get to the news that we're talking about, 4J was already facing a $30 million shortfall this year, and the district just found out it's actually going to be about $10 to $20 million worse than they thought.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's a pretty big number. And I think how we got here is there's some trends that have been coming together for quite a long time, including lower enrollment across Oregon and, you know, in Eugene, as well as, you know, property tax. The structure in Oregon is challenging. And the economic conditions, I think, for the increased deficit being worse than they thought. I think that this number that we had, 30 million, they created it last year.
Okay.
It's a projection. And so when we got here, economic conditions right now are quite a bit different than they were a year ago. And I think there were some other factors of our PERS, which is Oregon's pension system. Mm-hmm. Those rates were higher. And there were just health insurance costs are quite a bit higher. And there's quite a few things that are more expensive. And I think maybe the staffing numbers that they had maybe were a little bit off as well. So there's a couple different factors, and they're still crunching the numbers. We don't know what those additional cuts will look like yet, and we won't know for a couple weeks.
So there could be more pain.
Yes.
Okay. So can we assume it's going to be some fairly significant cuts to teachers and administration and that sort of a thing?
Yeah, so in the initial, the 4J school district knew it was going to be bad, and so they started the budget process early, starting putting out information and meeting with people, I think, since the start of the year, even into December, putting some information out and doing some work on the budget. And so what they did is they asked the school board permission well in advance for authorization to start the process of identifying jobs that could be cut, programs that they could either scale back or, you know, tech things they can eliminate. So they've already authorized the elimination of 269 jobs.
Wow.
And they had hoped to not actually eliminate all of those jobs. But with this number, it looks like they will have to eliminate every single one of those 269 jobs. And what the school district has said this week and last week is they are hoping that they will not have to go above those 269 jobs, that they'll be able to move some funds around and do some temporary things to avoid going beyond that cut number that they were already authorized to make. But it's still, you know, we still don't actually know the full numbers of what the new, if there are new reductions, what they'll look like.
Okay. These reductions, they would land next school year? Is that how it works?
Yes. There is not a mid-year cut happening. This is all planning for next school year's budget. So we would get through the end of the school year, the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of June, and these would happen in July.
Okay. You've spoken to the fairly new Superintendent Mickelson. What have they said, especially in light of this announcement? I know that they've talked about trying to be as transparent as possible. What kind of statements have they made?
Yeah, she's put out a couple statements, I think, you know, trying to make it clear how serious this is. I think they have been, you know, fairly transparent that I have seen in holding all of these meetings and all of these step-by-step, you know, with that releasing the budget in three, releasing the cuts, I mean, okay, in three phases. And I think with this one, I think she has acknowledged that it is quite discouraging to go through all of that work to get to 30 million and then find out that it's still not enough.
Okay. So Rebecca, what is sacred? What is not on the table right now?
Yeah, so right now, I did talk to the district last week about this. They are not considering closing any schools at this point. So, you know, that is something that other school districts have had to do, and that is not on the table right now for 4-H. The other thing that is not going to change is they've already, one of the budget cuts previously approved was the change to middle school schedules. So that was earlier this year.
Okay.
And they are not looking at any other schools or any other schedule changes next school year outside of that one that they have already done. So those are two things that are not going to change this coming school year. I don't know if that will be true in the next budget cycle or future years, but right now 4-J is not considering closing any schools or making any additional schedule restructuring for schools.
So what's next?
So the next budget meeting is on April 8th, and they're going to possibly present the actual budgets in those first couple budget meetings in April. So April 8th is when people should watch out for what happens next.
Okay. Rebecca Hanselwhite, always appreciate you giving us the 411 on what's going on at 4-J. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, an OSU researcher tells us about a new study which resets our understanding of our warming planet from 3 million years ago. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.